other states regulate it via administrative law. So, for example, New York just recently established the Office of Renewable Energy Siting, and that office has promulgated regulations regarding decommissioning. So I just, in the slide, put in a chart as an example of certain states and, you know, the laws that they have in place regarding decommissioning, some of which are, you know, they don't have any states, any laws at all. And some, there's a difference in wind and solar. I would say the majority of states still do not have specific wind or solar decommissioning statutes. And so most regulation does still occur at the local level, predominantly at the county level. And so a county ordinance may include specific decommissioning and restoration requirements and require submission of a decommissioning plan. A decommissioning plan might be a necessary condition to getting the project permitted in the county. So a decommissioning plan typically is a description of how the project owner is going to remove the facilities of the project from the land and restore the land to its pre-construction state. It also talks typically about the cost to do this restoration and decommissioning work. And then oftentimes as part of that cost, you can offset that cost via the salvage value of the facilities. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that gives you the net decommissioning cost of the project. And that net decommissioning cost is typically helps determine what sort of financial security needs to be posted, typically with the county. A decommissioning agreement may also be another source of decommissioning requirements and restoration requirements. This is a contractual agreement, typically with a county. So the project owner and the county will enter into this agreement. It may have specific provisions in it, but typically it deals mostly with the decommissioning security that needs to be posted and how the county may access that and under what circumstances. And this may be required by county ordinance, or it may be just a voluntary agreement that's sort of offered up as part of an exchange for project tax abatement and can be included in, you know, along with other commonly executed agreements with the county, such as an economic development agreement or a road use agreement. And then finally, the land control agreements themselves very frequently contain restoration and decommissioning requirements. The level of specificity in the land control agreement that can vary greatly, you know, among different developers, whether, you know, how specific their standard form of agreement is, you know, will depend on the developer. So then I want to talk about common decommissioning and restoration requirements that you'll find in those sources. You know, first and foremost, the removal of the project facilities, a discussion about the restoration of the land, a timing of the removal of the facilities, the decommissioning security, what form that security will take, consideration of salvage value, the timing of when the security needs to be put in place, and then whether or not it needs to be reevaluated. So first we'll talk about the removal of the project facilities. So, you know, typically there will be a requirement that the project owner removes their facilities following the expiration or termination of the land control agreement. And the project facilities you know, are broadly, you know, obviously in a wind lease, you know, the turbines themselves, solar lease, the solar panels, there's electric cabling, roads, fences, met towers, substations, things like that. There are some, there's some infrastructure that, you know, the project owner will likely want to leave in place, and the land control agreement may specify that. For example, it might say, you know, at the project owner's discretion, they may leave in place access roads or drilled wells, water wells, and then, you know, say, unless the landowner specifies otherwise or gives notice that they want them removed. It usually specifies